This is the first initial interview with Sarah Rosner, 81-year-old trade unionist and former business agent of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America. The interview was held in Sarah Rosner's home on South Kingsley. She lives alone in a rather comfortable old house. She seems to get along fairly well, although she does use a cane to walk and has some breathing difficulties after exertion. She seems rather vigorous, and her voice and manner of speaking is very strong and rather tough. In fact, her whole impression, which she conveys both in terms of her speaking pattern and the manner of expression, is of a very, quote, tough, close quote, woman. She came to the United States at the age of 15 in 1908, and after first working as a domestic, she then began working in tailor shops. She became exposed to unionism and involved following and during the 1910 general strike in the industry in Chicago. It was through the union that she became radicalized, in fact, and became a lifelong socialist. She identifies very strongly with the women and fought within the union for the rights of women, and describes at length the difficulties both with other women and with the male leadership. She started a women's local in Chicago, and she eventually became business agent for her local from 1921 to 1924. After that, she went to Brookwood College and then again went back to Chicago to work. She left Chicago in 1938 and came to Los Angeles, where she again was involved in union activity. She was initially very suspicious of me and the project, being concerned about anything that would hurt the union. She's very aware of the way in which women were treated. This suspicion then, however, seemed to be allayed.
Beginning with, say, where you were born and brought up, what your family was like. I presume that you came probably from Eastern Europe somewhere.
Eastern Europe?
No.
Well, if you mean Russia, you're wrong. I can tell you this. I was business agent, for instance, was sitting in my office. I'll tell you something about that later on, but I want to tell you the question that you put to me, Eastern Europe. And there were a bunch of men standing out there, and they were arguing amongst themselves. Sarah is a Galicianer, you know the expression. Mm-hmm. You understand that expression? The other one says, no, she's a Litvak. And still another one said, a Romanian. And they had a bet on. I says, come on, boys, give me the $5. None of you are right. I happen to be born in Hungary.
My husband's family's Hungarian.
I don't know what your background, but you seem to me like you're Scandinavian.
No, Litvak.
You're a Litvak. I'll be damned. You're a I would make, you see, now you look like a Scandinavian background. Oh, but they were betting left and right on, but they were all wrong. I was born in this, on an earthen floor, in a very little, small town, the name of Veritsa. I was born on a Friday in 1892, but my mother was preparing the Shabbos. She says to the man that used to take care around the house, Bill, get out, I'm going to get baby. I was the the ninth. Not the ninth. My mother gave birth to 12 children, nine survived. I was the oldest among the three youngest, if you can follow that. Perhaps if I would show you pictures, maybe you would get a better perspective of it. But anyway, then we moved to the capital of Nutch Savers, that's a city already. I was 5 years of age. My father was the rabbi. Now my goy. Yeah, you don't want a whole history. Not quite 4 years of elementary school in the old country.
In the city? After you moved to the city?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I couldn't finish the fourth grade because I didn't have clothes enough to put on. But my mother and my father as well, they both came from the richest background. Even my grandmother could read and write. My mother told me I was at the age of 11. She said, "You'll cry, we'll never see you go to school as you are." She said, "You're not going to walk the streets. You don't go to school." And it was the woke then that the rabbi's children, the rich children, they had to do something. They wouldn't let them go idle to learn sewing or something. But that's only part of it. So I learned to use the needle and use the machine. I'm making it in a hurry. Anyways, things became very difficult, and we had already one of my sisters, the second to the oldest in this country, was married. Also a brother and another sister. To cut the long story short, my father and mother came out 3 months before I migrated. With my older brother, who's 3 years older than myself, and a younger sister. My younger sister who passed away in a fire in this big house, I would have never... It's one thing leads into another, it's kind of complicated. I landed in Chicago in 1908, April the 1st, 1908. I landed without an address. And the only thing I remember that I used to correspond with a sister was here. I remember there was... I said to the coachman, the horse and buggy, I said, 121 North Lincoln Street. I didn't say North. I said Lincoln Street, 121. And when we got to the house finally, oh yes, I looked up. I'm sorry, are you familiar with Chicago? You are from Chicago. I looked up in the South Street station and I saw Rush Tower on the Hungarian, the alphabet is Latin, the same as. So I says to my brother, "Benjamin," I said, "Dave, this is not Chicago, this is Rush Tower." At any rate, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, April the 1st. we come to the place, left at the door, and my sister, the one was here, and he lived next door. My mother had established herself, my father was a rabbi. And the shul was in the same place where we lived, separated a bit. On one side, and I knocked at the door. And I said, I remembered somebody taught me to say, "Mother dear, I'm hungry. I've never seen a Negro in my life, you know, only on pictures." And I knocked at the door, and a big fat man came out. And I said, "Mother dear," to see how it next door to my sisters. She says, and he says, "Yakubovich, the green ones are here." And my parents lived next door. And on the corner was one saloon, and across the street was another saloon. That kind of a neighborhood. This was 1 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock, they put me on a wagon. I never did any housework in my life. And we were poor. But I know how to sew, and I know how to read and write. I used to read. And I couldn't speak Yiddish very well either, in spite of the fact. Only on Shabbos. My father would say, "Shabbos, you've got to speak Yiddish." And the three of us, youngest in the family, can we tell stories? How can you tell a Hungarian story in Yiddish? It was almost impossible. So they put me on a wagon and hired me out to a Jewish butcher, by the way, and it was Erev Pesach. As long as you're a Litvak, you understand what I'm talking about. I don't have to translate it for you. And she had just given birth to a baby. And those days, very few people have their children in hospitals. She gave me the worst blankets. I didn't know what the hell is this. And I was clumsy as hell. And my name was Rosner Sarina, you know. And she wanted to give me an English name, American name, Americanized me like it. She, "Your name is Sadie." And that sounded so out of my imagination. I said, "I don't want that name." I told her the best I knew how in Yiddish. And wherever I went, I was so clumsy, I turned everything over, you know, under my feet. I was 15 years old. She says, "Sally, what's in the farmer?" I said, nothing. Well, I then used to cut, listen, I've written some of it. I can show you some of the memories. I've got some of it. I was still hoping that someday I'll compile it and make something of it. First, Sula has written Della with Water, you know, I suppose. I was different, man. She was an anarchist. I was a socialist almost. Since I became class counselor, anyways. Then it was Erev Pesach. I wanted to be by the first name of my father. I couldn't stay there. So, but I didn't know how to get to the streetcar or anything. I didn't know my whereabouts. Where it was, but nerve I had. I think that carried me through life, the strikes. And whatever you want to know. So, I didn't know what a transfer meant. They gave me a transfer, I went on Sitka. I knew, I remembered the address. As I said, this was, arrived at 1 o'clock, this was probably the following day, I don't remember exactly. I've got it written down someplace, after all, it's 65 years ago. I got off from one streetcar, and I keep asking, getting information, where am I, how am I to get home? I ask in German, I ask in Hungarian. I had a picture for me, a vision of a woman, she was a real, genuine, bitter old maid. I am one. But I'm not bitter. So I decided I'm going to a store. I wasn't actually dumb, but I was uninformed, ignorant in a way. Finally, I'm one woman. Got a hold of me. Even the butcher couldn't direct me properly. When I got out of there, a woman, she looked very nice. I had her beautiful face before me. She got hold of me by the hand. She took me, brought me to the house, to the front of her, where the man was sitting on the stoop there, waiting for my father to start. So, the Hungarian style, kiss the hunt. You know what that means? It was the style, you kissed the woman's hand. So I kissed her hand in gratitude. So the Jews laughed at me because I kissed her. Now I wasn't the deal type at all. Since I had on, there was a rebellious feeling in me. I rebelled when I was, I think, born the battle against injustice. I didn't stay there long. From there, there was a lunchman that took me to a corset factory. Cable corset factory on Armitage in Milwaukee Avenue. I walked. That was about 2 or 3 miles, because I wanted to save the nickel. But I didn't work on Saturday. I worked Sundays, I scrubbed floors to make up for the Saturday. I'm just jumping from one thing to another. I'll get to the woman's question shortly.
Now, when was this, just a few months after you arrived that,
yeah,
you started at the corset factory?
Yeah.
And were you doing hand sewing there?
No, I don't want to tell you. I was putting on tags on the corset. Then I says to the foreman that I can work on a machine. Not an electric machine. I've never seen an electric machine, but a sewing machine. They put me on, I was getting $5 a week. It was from 7:30 to 6 o'clock. And I stuck to the Miss Remke, I remember the name. She was about 8 feet tall. And she spoke German. She took a liking to me. I worked there quite a while, about 7 or 8 months. I learned, I was very ambitious. I got on to it right away. I was a binder, put on garters and binding. we made a collection for the fur lady. So I worked too hard. She makes more money than I do. There's no need for me to contribute. So she started picking at my work. So I took them out of my side. But the half-fur lady, the star one, she implored me to stay. I said, no, I don't. So when I came home, my mother was standing by the gate. She said, what are we going to do now? That's what the family depended more on my $5 than they did on the rest. To put it briefly, she depended on my income. I said, don't worry, Mother, I'll get a job. So I went up to Hatchef and Marks. There's one thing I never lied. The only time I lied is when I came to protect the worker's job or to get a job for myself. Even if my life was in jeopardy, that was brought, inculcated in my father and my mother both. I can go into that. Probably you want to know about me more than about my parents, I suppose. I come up and they ask me what I can do. I can do everything. There's nothing. So they give me to join the coats. Instead of taking the front and the back and join, I took the both fronts and joined them together. So the woman says, get a hammer of chasana. I should go home and get married. 8 years later, this was in 19-8, no, not 8 years, 8, and then 21, 13 years later. And this was in 1908, and in 1921, I was making business days in Hatchef and Marks.
You were there all that time?
Yeah. I went to a different shop because they have factories all over. I went from hand sewing because I could sew by hand too. I never stayed on one job. I always wanted to do something else. I wasn't satisfied. It was very monotonous to do the same thing. I wasn't satisfied just to baste a collar. I liked to get a hold of something and create it. I was more creative. I remember sitting at the trade board with Professor Mamba, who was the impartial chairman. And before I became business agent, I was working on a special machine. I was making much more than as a business agent. But the reason I became business agent, because here's where I'm coming, the woman's part. Because I wanted to make room for a woman.
There had been no women business agents?
No. I was the first woman coat maker business agent in the city of Chicago, including the workers' union. And I was trapped by the very man that I looked up to, in spite of it, he was a great man, Frank Rosen. He threatened me. He showed me all kinds of performance. I told him, you know what you can do with it? I told him outright what he can do with it. And the irony, talk about women. I think they have to go a long ways yet. I wasn't elected by the women. When I had a meeting, a campaign meeting, there were 1,500 people, 2,000 people. Hot carriers hall. A woman gets up, why don't you go home and wash the dishes? What do you want to take a man's job away? I said, sister, I want to see you after the meeting. Now, I didn't I had more patience than he had. I just want to point out that the women are, and as far as the men are concerned, they always reminded me what they said, that the Negroes have an opportunity. Why didn't they do it? Why didn't they do it? If they did, they knocked them over the head. How many times did they knock me over the head? If I said that the finisher that uses her eyesight, I remembered, I first became chair lady, and then I didn't become business agent right away. It wasn't so easy. Now, I wasn't elected by the women because first of all, before that, I'll go back to 1920. I have to do that. I'm skipping, jumping from one thing to another because it's almost impossible for me to go out chronologically. So it happened. In 1920, we had the National Convention of the Amalgamated in Boston Convention. There were 7 women running for delegates from different locals. Everyone was defeated. Not everyone was defeated. I said to myself, not only myself, I got a whole of several others. We also had a woman in there, Nettie Richardson, who was also a feminist. She was a real feminist. I said, what the hell is this? I said, this will never do. If I can help it, there will never be another convention without a woman delegate representing. We called together. We made collections among ourselves, put out leaflets, called a meeting. We had about 200 women. We sent delegates. And here I was active in local 39. I'd like to bring you down a picture to show you. I hate that. Climb the steps, I'll do it for you.
Oh.
See, I was an officer. Oh my God, look. Now when we organized the women's local, they called me in and they gave me money to go as a delegate. I said, it's not a truth, but I accepted the money. But we organized the women's local to 75.
Which was all women?
But unfortunately, see, what happened is what I'm trying to say. I can't walk out this. It's kind of hard for me. I'll kill it first. Didn't want to be business agent because from the money angle, from monetary, it didn't pay for me. I merely wanted to break ground for a woman. And I suggested that such be the case, and they didn't follow through. The woman that I left in that place stayed there until she died. And as soon as I left, the whole thing went to pot. Now the local is abolished entirely. They had a look. I used to go on my own expense to different cities, try to get the women together. We had a member on the general executive board. Used to correspond with her, try to get to establish a women's bureau within the organization. I have all those papers, but I haven't got them at hand just to, but I can talk about it. You better ask me questions because I'll get up the street, but I'm as far as the Boston Convention. You see, now there never was a convention after that without women representation. But I haven't got a woman business in Chicago now.
Now, let me backtrack just a little. See, when you started in Heart Chapter Marx in 1909.
I started that in the latter part of 1908.
The latter part of 1908. And then you stayed there this entire time?
I stayed there till... this is something, see, that I have to tell you this. I didn't work on holidays, Shabbos. I was showing a Shabbos. After I was very active during the 1910 strike, it came to pass, I have to bring this in order to make the picture clear. I didn't want to go into details really because I used to walk to the picket line. And I don't mean that I spared the scat's feeling. Although, many years later, when I was sitting at Brookwood Labor College, I argued against violence, and I still do. I said, through education, persuasion. But when it comes to it, I'm not myself. I lose myself. I can go on telling. But anyways, I was on the picket line on Saturday, and I used to come Friday before sundown. I used to ask for a pass to go home. After the 1910 strike, I asked for a pass. So the foreman told me, he said, you could be on the picket line on Saturday. You can work and I'll get the hell out of you. I picked my tools and I went. I didn't work on Saturday. And I smoked by the way since I'm 5 years old. But this has nothing to do, one thing has nothing, but the Hungarians, where I come from, my mother smoked, my grandmother smoked.
Did you smoke on Shabbos too?
I didn't. And later on, when I smoked, I used to go in the bathroom, and my father, he probably knew that I smoked, but he would never reprimand me because he knew if he would tell me something, I'd come out and nip him. He was a very, very learned man. He was the one that gave me the first introduction or knowledge of what a strike meant. I didn't know what a strike meant. So, to come back, where was I?
You were beginning to tell me about with the 1910 strike.
Yeah. So, I went. I left. I couldn't get a job. I was blacklisted. I couldn't get a job nowhere. If you read the history, have you got a Hillman's book?
No, I don't.
I'll give you one.
Oh, fine.
I'll give you one. You may find my picture. I'm not very conspicuous. I'm not a conspicuous person. But I'll give you pictures that I never looked. I was never arrested. I managed now. I wasn't looking for no publicity. I couldn't get a job. I finally got a job in a place. I was a very efficient worker, and a very fast worker, a peace worker. I got a job in a place. And they liked me so much, this is after I was walked the street, I don't know how long. Made me fall mind you, coming off from picket line, being four-lady. All right, I'm four-lady. I worked there a couple of days. He called me and he says, listen, you demand the same work, but I'm going to reduce their wages, price. I thought to myself, and if I'm to die, will I do that? I had no conception of the union, how it works, of anything. All I knew, you have to strike, it doesn't work when there is a strike, and if the boss does the wrong thing, fight. There was one place I took a coat, put it over the examiner's hat, and I just punched him left and right. And when I wanted to know, I used to go into the shop. I wanted to find out if there are union people. I used to sing at the International or whistle the International, and I get a response. But so I got the girls together. I said, you come to my house, we'll have a meeting. I don't want you to work for less money. And this is what the boss wants. And actually, I was fine. Even I punched out the clock. He said, where the hell are you going? He said, you're the fool. You're supposed to be with the boss. I said, I just got out of the stripe. You don't want me to be a scab. Are you crazy? All right, so that. So walk again. I walked and walked. I finally walked up to Charles Coffin. I walked up there and there was a young foreman, blonde. I was so attracted by him. I just fell in love with him. I read enough, especially in those days, beware. What the conditions were, I can tell you plenty stories about that. All right, so I got the job there as an arm home baster. And then I had a heavy coat. He'd come over and help me. I couldn't understand him. He felt the same way about me as I felt about him. Again, not to go into too long of a story, but a month or two later, this very man that made me fall in me came up to visit this man. He looks up and he sees me there. He says, you know who you have in here? He says, you and Emma Goldman in here. How can you have her in here? She's... So he looks at him. He says, well, do I care? She's a good worker. He asked me to go out with him. He used to come to the house. Then I began to read and go to lectures, go to Emma Goldman's lectures, go to other lectures. And I always read, even in the old country. So I worked there. And by the way, I got this black and white written down, orally written. The only man that I ever loved in my life, and I never as much allowed him to kiss me. Not that I remained that way, but that was the only man that I really felt electrified. I worked there from 1912 to 1915. The strike broke out. In the meantime, he established a shop for himself, and I went to work for him personally. He had a shop for himself. He used to come to the house and...
Was he Jewish?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wouldn't think. He asked me to go up once in the Kippur, and I says, may the day never come that I should. And I was very, I was religious up to the age of 20. I held every fast day. And when I used to, before I had my lunch, I would say a dechen and had a bench and all that goes with it. I lived up to the level of the law. I mean, I either do a thing or don't do it.
What language were you using at this time?
English.
You were already using English.
Well, I taught in Hungarian. When I was thinking, I always was still, it's still a handicap to me. Even today, when I write, my spelling is I have a habit of scribbling. All my writing is scribbled. You see, it's the best therapy for me, is scribbling. Now, I think I have a typewriter, I was thinking in Hungarian.
Hungarian was always your major language, and yes. Yiddish was very...
I read Jewish. In fact, even in your country, sometimes the women used to come to me, I used to dub for them. But I didn't know what I was dubbing. I didn't understand it.
See? But when you would talk, like when you were organizing the workers, you would use English or Hungarian?
Yes, English. No, I acquired the, when I came to this country, I said, I didn't want to come. I cried all night. I all wanted to come to America. I didn't. I said, I don't want to become a goy. See? I didn't. But once I landed here, I said, this is going to be my adopted country, and I'm going to do everything I can to be worthy of it. You know, and I still feel that way. I'm a very good American. Although I knew its imperfections, and I'd like to see it better, I fought for it to be better, but I know there's no other country in the world that's compared. No, I'm a very good American.
Now, when did your name get changed?
My name? Never changed. My name still is Sarah. That's the only thing. Rosner was my name.
But your first name initially was Rosen? What?
My name is Sarah Rosner, all the time.
Oh, okay.
Never changed. I never changed my name. So, to come back to this man, I worked till 1950. 1950, there was another strike. Well, there was a little pocket maker, he blew the whistle. Little Galiziana. He blew the whistle. I don't think twice. My boss stands by the door, and I go with the rest. He says to me, where are you going? What business are you? He says to me, you'll cry when nobody will see you. You'll regret the day you ever moved. I says, I don't care. I says, I wouldn't violate my principle for nothing under the sun. Not only did I go out on strike, but I became chairman of the strike hall. And I was the day and night preparing sandwiches for the strikers. I remember Schlesinger came in one night. He says, I was slicing bread. I wouldn't want to be one of the sketches under your arm, under your hand. But again, it came to pass that he settled strike.
Was the 1915 strike also a general strike? Like the 1910 one?
Not quite, because Hartsheffenmark was organized. Hartsheffenmark was, they accepted, there was a preferential shot. It was, I remember I paid dues under the table. It wasn't, it came later, that's another. But I'm trying to come to the point where the Boston Convention, the women in the organization.